It's time!
You're listening to Pound for Pound, ringside for all things MMA and boxing on WFUV Sports.
Welcome into Pound for Pound. I am your host, Andrew Carneri, alongside Zach Cordova and Mahdi Dembele back in the studio. Very happy to have you back. Guys, kind of took a bit of a hiatus, but during that time we had some amazing fights, UFC 298, some big title changes there. And, of course, UFC Fight Night Moreno versus Roy Val happening in Mexico City. Very fun fight night. We also saw the rematch of Brian Ortega, Yair Rodriguez. That was very fun. But before we get into all of those recaps, guys, how are you doing? Zach, I'll go to you first.
I'm doing good, man. I mean, I'm still a little sour after watching Volk get knocked out like that. But, hey, I mean,
it was life. A little depressing. I'm not going
to
lie.
Oh, definitely. It's a hard watch, but... I mean, that's life. That's fighting. That's how it goes. That's why we love the sport. So, yeah, I'm excited to be back here this week.
Yeah, guys, after two very, very long weeks, I'm finally back. It's good to be back. You know, there's something about coming onto the mic and just speaking with my boys about Cage. It's an amazing feeling. Take care of yourselves, guys. Take care of the mental health because it's a real thing.
Of course, and we're glad to have you back.
Thank you.
Show's not the same without you. So
liar.
No, I'm being completely honest there.
Thank
every
you.
Every host has their own, distinct traits and everything like that, and distinct picks. Also, you were just saying in the studio over there that Bilal might be champion one day, and yeah. I'm saying you are absolutely crazy.
No, there's you guys no just don't want it. Start the show.
Yeah, you're right. I don't
start
want
show.
It.
Start the show.
All right. Anyway, let's just get into this UFC 298 recap. I was thinking we might just go from like the bottom to the top here, like focus maybe on the Merab fight first, but honestly, I think that's kind of burying the lead. So let's just talk about this Volkanovski versus Topuria fight. Topuria, your new featherweight champion, knockout in the second round. A really clean right hand that just put Volkanovski out cold. And in retrospect, at least for me, it was a thing that I was kind of expecting. I felt like if Topuria was going to land very clean in this fight, he could put Volkanovski out. And that's just for the fact that he was coming off so quickly off of that Makhachev head kick knockout. And in retrospect, I mean, just... I don't know why he would come back that early, So, general takes on the fight, Volkanovski's performance, new champion Topuria. I'll go to you for a sec.
I mean, I said it on the last episode. I think I may even predicted the round. I mean, it just kind of felt like this was Topuria's moment, I feel. And even during the fight, even though Volk won that first round, I feel pretty comfortably, even was winning the second round. There's just a little something extra on every single shot that Topuria threw, and it just almost felt like a matter of time until he got Volk up against the cage. And when he got Volk there, he kind of, I almost feel like, panicked and just tried to, did a really good job of cutting off the cage, and Volk kind of realized his only chance was to kind of try to counter-strike, dropped his hands, and just got caught with probably one of the most perfect right hooks I've ever seen. Oh. I mean, just power.
Yeah, a perfect right hook indeed. I mean, I don't think you could have played it any better. I believe you said it was 0-17. Guys find their second act, and they're not able to after the age of 35. I mean, I don't know what Volkanovski's done. And we love his fighting spirit. He's a guy that takes every single fight. I mean, 4 months in between that last fight that he just had, Ilya Topuria is here. And it's something that I saw with him in the Josh Emmett fight. Josh Emmett is an older contender in this weight division, but he's an animal. I mean, he's as tough as they come, and he'll lay it on you. And something in that fight told me Ilya Topuria is going to be a problem in this division. And again, I don't know if you could catch Alexander Volkanovski with much, but I think he's the best pure kickboxer on the entire roster. I don't know if you could get him any better than that. Gave him exactly what he wanted. He missed on the left straight, and then from there, the right hook was just money.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't want to kind of overshadow how big of a star Topuria is in the UFC now, because, I mean, I feel like maybe in Western culture, not so much. He kind of is viewed as like a second, you know, version of a Conor McGregor, and that can, you know, kind of irk people right or wrong based on your views of Conor McGregor. But in Spain, I mean, I remember seeing the newspapers when he won the belt, just plastered all over the newspapers, his face, the belt. And I think he also walked out during a Real Madrid game.
He did.
Yeah. And
didn't
like,
he also gain citizenship? Because I know he's Spanish and Georgian.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah, so, I mean, talk about...
Welcome to the party.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if that's the easiest or hardest way to get citizenship. I mean, probably a little bit of both. But
becoming UFC champ is the only way now to get citizenship.
I guess so. Yeah, I guess so. But anyway, though, I do kind of want to bring it back to this fight. And Volkanovski, you were saying, Zach, that he was kind of winning that first and second round, and I agree with you. And also Volkanovski's coach agrees with you, too. I don't know if you saw his comment earlier this week. Basically saying like, yeah, I felt like we had a good game plan. We were doing what we kind of wanted to do for the first round, second round, and just kind of got caught. Do you guys kind of agree with the mentality that like, oh, it was just kind of a he zigged, I zagged type of mentality? I made a bad move, but in all likelihood, if that rematch happens, I'm the champion.
Yeah, it's just like combat sports, right? Everybody has a puncher's chance. It's a reason, especially this is more so boxing, of course. The boxing guy got to talk about boxing. It's a puncher's chance. One false move, it could be your last. I mean, you look at the fight, yeah, he was winning. I would have taken him on points. It kind of reminds me of Kamaru Usman and Leon Edwards. You know, Kamaru's controlling one, and then Leon hits him with the leg kick. I mean, nothing more to say here, really. It's just so sad because it's Volk, man. I mean, winning on the fight is just one wrong move, and then Topuria is able to capitalize. That's how fighting is. It's a game of inches, but the centimeters in between are so, so important.
Yeah, but I don't know if I agree with just, like, Volk made the wrong move, which,
okay.
I mean, he got in a bad spot, but it was really Ilya who put him there. Ilya's that whole...
He did walk him down.
He did
his cage cutting.
Yeah.
I mean, like you said
incredible.
Earlier, I think, honestly, Volk's coach saying that, it overshadows the performance that Topuria had.
No, definitely. I mean, that's the one thing that he could not give him was let him get him up against the cage like that. And Ilya throws a big power combo, and, I mean, there's nothing else you can really do besides back up. And the spot that Volk was in, he put himself against the cage. Ilya masterfully put him there and just landed that right hook. It just seems like he's been training his whole life to land that hook. And I mean, to be fair, if we go to a rematch here, which I don't know, I hope it's not soon for Volkanovski's sake, but I also don't know if it's too much different in a rematch, because that powers, it just seemed like every single time he threw and one of those shots glanced by Volk's cheeks. I mean, it's they have so much power on them that it just seems like he just needs one. And in a 5-round fight, the margin for error is so, so small, and he's so good at setting things up that I just don't see it going any other way besides that way, and even if they do rematch.
Yeah, no, I mean, honestly, I think Volkanovski will need to pull, like, some magic out of the bag, something like that, to really make this rematch competitive if it does happen, because I agree with you, Zach. I mean, I think that Topuria had a masterful game plan, and honestly, it kind of hard counters the style of Volkanovski. To an extent, like you said, Mahdi, that kind of, you know, dancing around kickboxing, counter-striking. Because, I mean, that's Ilya Topuria's bread and butter, especially being a boxing-based fighter. Rematch, I don't know how that would really pan out, but at the very least, I mean, I think we're all kind of in unanimous agreement here that Volkanovski needs to stay out for at least like a half year at the minimum.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's two bad knockouts back-to-back in the span of, what, like 4 months?
Yeah.
I mean, that's massive. And I remember, like, thinking a couple weeks ago, I was watching his fight against Chad Mendes. Great fight. But I remember Volkanovski getting, like, pretty badly hurt in that fight in some really tough positions. But because he was early on or earlier on in his career, didn't have as many, didn't take as much damage, he was able to work through that and actually get the win. So I think that definitely plays some of a factor in this fight. But I mean, do you guys want to see a rematch soon? Do you want to wait a while, see Volk maybe fight another contender?
You definitely have to wait a while. And I go back to it. It's basic fighting math, like combat sports math, right? If you take an immediate rematch, the first guy is just going to do what he did to the second guy, only quicker. Like, this is going to end even faster than it already did. And Volkanovski is a guy who likes to work. He loves to fight. He loves to put on a show. But after two bad knockouts like that, this, you're starting to get into dangerous territories where you could... Zach, you were talking about this off camera. Tony Ferguson, after the Gaethje fight, he started taking a bunch of fights and he lined up against some of the best contenders in lightweight. Fall from grace, one of our favorite fighters. We don't want to see Volkanovski go down that path. Step back, take a second, take a breather, recoup, and take that champion, like that hero's journey back. Maybe take a couple of tune-up fights is what they say in the business, and then come back to that.
Yeah, I think Ilya, I think just recently mentioned, maybe if not today, it was yesterday, said that he doesn't want to fight again until maybe October, November, maybe even September-ish, which I feel like would be a good enough time for Volk to take off. I mean, the argument is definitely there because when you have a guy who's reigned as champion for so long, has been as active as Volk is, I mean, even taking the Islam fight, even though he lost that fight by knockout, he helped the UFC out in such a great deal just taking that fight that I think it's really hard to for anyone in the UFC to look Volk in the eye and say, no, you can't have this rematch, because it's...
Especially in an era where immediate rematches is for titles is, yeah, you know, something that's fairly commonplace. Yeah, I think that Volkanovski 100% deserves a rematch. It's just, I think more so it's up to him on if he should accept it as soon as they offer it, because I feel like the UFC will offer it probably a little bit earlier than he should actually come back, in my opinion.
Okay.
But... I don't know. We'll see what happens at the end of the day. Ilya Topuria is your new champion. I do want to talk about some other fights in this UFC 298 main card. Namely, Robert Whittaker coming back to form against Paulo Costa. 3-round decision. Really impressive fight. Definitely not as, I guess, brutal and a barn burner as, say, like Paulo Costa versus Luke Rockhold or Robert Whittaker versus Yoel Romero, but... Despite that, very, very entertaining fight. I really enjoyed it. And it was nice to see Whittaker, you know, back on the horse. So, guys, what was your general takes on this fight? Were you happy? And what did you think of the matchup?
I have a few opinions about Paulo Costa. I actually think that he should actually be better than he actually is, and his resume should be. That's to the side. I'm a huge Bobby Knuckles guy. I love Robert Whittaker. We just talked about how guys over the age of 35 or older, 0-17, except Bobby Whittaker may, I do think he has a second act as champion. I believe he had the championship belt back at 213 when GSP vacated the belt. I believe that was the start of his run, and then he had the monster fight against Rory McDonald, who was like the next GSP, and like he's been an amazing championship, and then he lost the belt. And then me and you were talking about how maybe he beats Dricus. You thought he was going to obliterate him, Dricus.
Yeah, that's still such a bad pick. Yeah. I wish I could scrub that pound-for-pound episode.
And we were existence. Like, Bobby Knuckles is done. But he beats another top contender in Paulo Costa. You know what? I think I really, really like Paulo. I really like Robert Whittaker. I think maybe he has one last championship run in him. That's how much I like him. I put that much faith into him.
You think he's next in line? Because it seems like right now it's going to be Izzy and Dricus. So do you think he's next in line after
I think
that?
After that, particularly because middleweight's so like top heavy. Like, okay, I'm thinking like Cannonier, Vittori.
Even Khamzat now. Even Khamzat's now in that division.
Strickland's still there.
You know what? Yeah. This is a nice win. And I say if he gets another one of these, you know what? Bobby Knuckles is in the conversation once more. I think one more fight after this, if he's able to win it, then he puts himself back in that.
You know which fight I would absolutely love to see now is Strickland and Whittaker fight.
Strickland
I think
and Whittaker.
That's a fantastic fight.
Yeah.
I think that
is definitely the next fight to make, especially if you're going to be trying to find a number one contender.
Take out the former champ.
Oh, that would be a sick fight, and definitely one I would want to see later this year. Yeah, could definitely determine who's up next. I think right now it's going to be Izzy Dricus. I don't think there's anyone else that would be right now, especially after all of the trash talk and everything going on.
Izzy has too much star power. UFC wants him back.
Definitely.
Too much.
And I think, I don't know if you saw that podcast recently, but Izzy mentioned that the fight was offered to Dricus for 300 to headline it. And he
declined.
Supposedly declined it. So
supposedly, yeah.
I don't know how true that is. I mean, I kind of believe it because considering he didn't take the shot last year in Australia when it was offered to him. I mean, maybe there's an injury he did take a good deal of damage against Strickland, so I would understand why he would turn that down. I mean, that's such a quick turnaround, especially to fight Israel Adesanya in such a big spot. But
yeah, massive spot there.
Oh, I mean, incredibly massive spot.
Main event
of
UFC 300.
Yeah, but really big comeback for Robert Whittaker, really bouncing back. I mean, he looked almost a little bit like kind of like he was reborn, I guess, this fight after losing to Dricus in the way he did. He definitely really looked good in this one, even though he almost got rocked. And he almost got finished in that first round.
Should have been finished. Yeah.
With that wheel
that
quick.
That wheel kick.
I mean, that seems like every Paulo Costa fight. If he had five or ten more seconds, he might win.
That's my thing about him. He never finishes. Yeah. And I really like your Sean Strickland take, because out of the other contenders, that's the last one that that's the last one Whitaker was able to. He already beat Costa. He beat Vittori. He beat Cannonier. He ran through those guys. Strickland's the last guy. If he beats Strickland, I think he's the number one contender.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I can see now main event Izzy Dricus, and then co-main you do Whitaker versus Strickland.
Hell yeah.
Set up the next contender right after that, which I always like when the UFC does that, like kind of has a contender fight in the second slot, and then the main event is where the bell happens. They kind of went away from doing that the past couple of years, brought it back, and I always think it's a good kind of marketing tactic. But, yeah, I mean, just a big win for Robert Whittaker, and like you said, eating that wheel kick. I mean, that's just kind of like classic Bobby Knuckles antics, almost getting finished and then just, you know, winning and then looking like, you know, pretty great after that point. But I will say, I mean, credit to Paulo Costa. A lot of people were kind of worried how he was going to look in this fight, and it definitely waned, you know, later on. But considering the elevation where they're fighting in Mexico City and his long layoff, I mean, I would say it's a pretty impressive performance for him, at least for me.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Madi, you kind of look a little...
it was kind of like a... He proved he still belongs in that top of that division. He's got the ranking. We haven't seen him fight in so long, pull out of so many fights. And,
yeah.
I mean, he showed up, and I don't think he looked bad, necessarily. I think he looked like he can still compete in the top of that division. So,
if anything, I don't think it's like a performance that's going to get him cut from the UFC anytime.
Oh,
no, not at all. Yeah. Absolutely not at all. Like, for the circumstance, yeah, Paulo Costa is still one of the best in the middleweight division. It's just that he doesn't finish. Like, the wheel, like, Paulo, just a little bit more from you, Paulo. You're right there. It's just
he also
like,
ran out of time, though, so you
I
can't
know.
Play
it's
at the
always
end of the round.
Something
but...
with Paulo Costa, man. He could be so much more in this division. You know, even going back to fights with, like, Izzy, like, dude, what you're just standing there eating leg kicks. And then you.
Yeah.
It's like when he gets it, he doesn't, like, there's no capitalization, always something in the way, whether it's him or external factors. That's my thing about Paulo Costa, really.
I would love and hope that fight with Khamzat is rebooked.
Yeah.
I think that is an incredible matchup.
I think he gets mauled by Khamzat.
Really?
Yeah.
That's for another episode. I think that is a fun fight, and I would love to see it. Stylistically, I think it's a banger, but...
Yeah.
I think that's where you kind of got to try to go from here, though, with Costa. I think you got to just put him in fun fights. I don't know if he gets back to a title shot, but he's definitely just someone who can bring a crowd.
I feel like the whole era of, like, title shot Costa, that ended with him losing to Adesanya. Yeah. I firmly believe that. I think from here on out, he's just a very fun fighter, a good contender, and kind of a bit of a gatekeeper. And I think, honestly, one, that's how you keep him active, because he's such a weird, infrequent fighter and just has kind of a problem with the UFC brass at times. Just offer him fun fights so that he'll always accept, you know, kind of a good purse to go along with it, some bigger names. I mean, I think that's where you kind of go with him, because obviously he's not, you know, kind of beating the top of the division, even though he's kind of hanging with him. One other fight I do want to talk very quickly about before we move on, talk about that UFC fight night in Mexico. Mrab Dabashvili, looking amazing against Henry Cejudo, doing everything in the fight from full suplexes to talking to Mark Zuckerberg while having Henry Cejudo in a front headlock. Crazy stuff. And I mean, it's hard to say that he's not the number one contender at bantamweight. I think anybody that says that or contests that is a flat-out idiot. I'm be real.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you. Also, I think you might have misspoke. I mean, UFC 298 still.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
No, you're good. But I think, oh, man, I mean, what a performance from – and did you hear his coach say that apparently he fought Aljo before that? In the locker room.
He fought his best friend?
They're training partners. Him and Aljo went five 3-minute rounds right before that fight. So that wasn't even his first fight of the night. That was his second fight of the night. And, I mean, his nickname is The Machine. I think he shows it every single time he's out there. The man doesn't get tired.
At all.
Ever.
At all.
Even getting rocked in the first round, you would have never known watching it after that point. I mean, the guy just doesn't get tired. He doesn't get hurt. He just keeps going. And no matter what, he's going to be in your face. And, he's definitely just kind of set himself apart from the rest of the pool right now in bantamweight in terms of that next title shot. Yeah. I think whoever wins this O'Malley-Vera fight that's coming up now in a week or two, I mean, that's the next fight. It's going to be Merab.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You can't deny the guy one more. I believe for the longest of times, he's been, like, number two. I mean, Merab, he's out here doing, like, spinning leg kicks, like, the most ridiculous stuff, fucking the swagger of the event. And a guy – and fight and beating a guy like Henry Cejudo doesn't hurt. Triple C on your – on your win column, that's a very, very nice win. Cejudo's been out for a long time, but a legend in this sport. I mean, like, Merab showed out. That's exactly how you want it to play out every single time. I mean, yeah, welcome to the party. Merab's here, guys.
And I took him down five times, too. Damn. I mean,
5 times out of 11 attempts. Yeah. Really impressive stuff. I mean, against a Olympic gold medalist Olympic that we're gold. Talking about here. Come I mean, on. I know it's kind of like integral to the Henry Cejudo storyline that he has that Olympic gold medal. But I mean, 5 for 11, like you just said. Not bad.
Yeah, no, great performance. All, also, did you see him? I mean, coming back to the Mexico City part, did you see in the press conference he pulled a Mexican flag out of his suit and said that Mexico needs representation, so he will be that representation? And so apparently he represents the Mexican people. He was down in Mexico City actually this weekend in a full outfit for his sombrero, everything. So apparently he is representing Mexico now along with Georgia. So, I mean, I definitely have become more of a fan of him. I think he is hilarious. I think personality-wise, he's...
Oh, I'm a massive fan.
He is one of the most fun people now in the UFC. I mean, the guy is just so funny.
Stealing O'Malley's jacket in the Prudential Center to his Instagram stories to, I guess, now being Mexico's adopted son. I mean, yeah, what can't this guy do? And, I mean, I'm really glad that the fan base is starting to like him now because... Mm-hmm. We've seen so many times with guys with these types of styles don't really do well when it comes to the promotion. But it's getting to the point now where, I mean, I literally saw a comment from O'Malley saying, like, hey, guys, I'm going to kind of change my game plan after I beat Cheeto, if he beats Cheeto. I'm going to set my sights fully on Merab because you guys believe that he's the number one contender and I want to face all contenders.
Yeah.
Which credit to O'Malley for kind of changing what he wanted to do, because initially he completely rejected Merab. He was like, you need a ton more fights. Which is whatever, but yeah, I'm very, very glad that, you know, the kind of shift is happening.
Yeah.
And all credit to Merab. And also, one last thing I want to mention, get your guys' take on, is Henry Cejudo. He said that he was going to retire if he lost his fight, and then immediately after, pretty much like a day after, he's like, hey guys, actually, I'm not retiring.
He didn't look the worst in that fight. I mean, like, he gave as much as Henry Cejudo could give. Like, he hit Merab with some pretty impressive stuff. Don't believe everything you read, kids. It's Henry Cejudo. But yeah, that's not happening.
I mean, to do as well as he did against Merab in his second fight of the night, apparently. I mean, I think Cejudo now is just kind of made to, I guess, have those kind of fun fights and be one of those guys who is a big name, legend in the sport, and helps him prop up some younger contenders maybe to get people's name out there. I think that's kind of the fights that he's going to be looking at in the future. I don't know if he gets back to another title shot. I think he's a little too old and that time's passed, but doesn't mean we can't see him in some exciting fights up in the future. So
yeah, no, I think the King Cringe will definitely be back. We'll see how competitive he'll be. But I mean, yeah, I think there is definitely some tread left in those tires. But moving on, though, I do want to talk about this Mexico City fight night. Thank you for correcting me earlier.
No,
should be very, very fun to talk to you guys about. I mean, just looking throughout this entire card, I mean, it was really, really fun stuff. I mean, like you said, Merab Dhavashvili was there. But I kind of want to zone in on this co-main event in the featherweight division. It was a rematch that originally happened out in Long Island. I went to go see it as a fan. Very disappointed when Brian Ortega broke his collarbone, or I believe it was
dislocated shoulder. Yep, something
dislocated
like that,
shoulder. Yep. Either one of the two, I believe it was the shoulder, though. That fight ends like a minute and a half in. It gets rescheduled for this past Saturday. Eventually happens. Brian Ortega, after probably having one of the worst first rounds I've ever seen in my life, a complete 10-8, 10-7, he goes out there and beats Yair Rodriguez in a really, really impressive performance, almost 10-8-ing him in the third round leading up to the finish. So, I mean, guys, I just kind of want your general takes on Ortega's big comeback win against Yair Rodriguez and kind of just some of the things that you saw in it. And maybe do you think Ortega will be a contender in this featherweight division moving on, or do you think this was kind of a one-off?
I mean, from rolling his ankle right before while Bruce Buffer's announcing him to winning that fight. I mean, I was nervous for him going into that first round because I was like, oh, man, he's already hurt.
Mm-hmm. I remember seeing that. Yeah.
Yeah, we just started this and he's already hurt again. But no, I mean, the grit, the heart to go into that fight and even while injured to pull that one out. I mean, he definitely proved that he still belongs in the top of that division. People are questioning it because he was still with the high ranking, hadn't fought in so long, and he was still holding that top spot, and everyone was wondering, well, how are they not going to take his ranking away? Well, he comes in and he proves he beats a very, very capable Yair Rodriguez in a pretty convincing way. I mean, that second and third round, he pretty much dominated, especially in terms of his grappling. He shows that he is one of the best, if not the best grappler in that division, and just, I mean, puts Yair in that head and arm, or what was it, triangle choke, I believe?
Yeah.
Arm triangle choke. And, I mean, finished that fight, and it just showed so much heart in that fight, and I think he's very close to maybe even getting a title shot.
You know what? You convinced me, like, right now on the spot. The layoff was the problem. I was like, I don't know if he's legit. Like, does he still have the juice? Yeah, he beat Yair. Yair was winning earlier on, and to get injured so early on in the fight, I mean, an ankle roll as you're literally stepping into the octagon, it's like, well, here we go. Same old from Brian Ortega, and he comes out and he wins. You know what? It's still in the back of my mind. I need to see more. I know he's a top contender. I need to see more. Just no,
I
more.
Agree. I agree.
Ortega.
Especially after not fighting for so long.
Yeah,
but
it's the layoff.
That fight is such a big statement.
Yeah, man.
Because
Yair,
not only injured before the bell even rings, but immediately rocked and hurt bad. I mean, he got dropped bad against
the
cage.
Bloody nose.
He bounces back and wins it. And it takes a lot of heart and a lot of grit to come out with a fight like that. So definitely, I think that's a huge statement on his part.
Yeah, I mean, and I feel like Brian Ortega has always been kind of known as a guy who has a lot of heart in the UFC and doesn't have a lot of quit. I mean, you want to go back to his title fight against Volkanovski or his title fight against Holloway, both really impressive outings in terms of his heart and how much damage he could take, even though he was unsuccessful in both of those fights. But yeah, I mean, at least for me, it just seems like he's finally kind of putting it all together, at least for me. And I agree with both of you. I definitely need to see more out of him to kind of, you know, verify if he is a good contender or not, or a legitimate contender. But just to be able to get as hurt as he was and not just kind of fall into the hole of losing each round after that, because I feel like we've seen that story so many times with Brian Ortega, where he'll get hurt really bad, lose the next round, and then kind of snowballs out of there. And he might have one or two big moments where it looks like he might finish the fight, might come back, but then those kind of slip away, and then he ends up just losing the fight. Here, though, I felt like he got hurt, was able to survive the round. His coaches kind of gave him some good advice, and then from there, he was actually able to implement a game plan, stop that kind of snowballing effect, and really get the finish here. It was something that I haven't seen from Ortega yet.
Can I suggest something? Mm-hmm. I mean, okay, so as of right now, Brian Ortega is the number three contender after that amazing win. I want to see another, maybe a banger against, if I were to suggest a fighter, Arnold Allen, maybe. I know Arnold Allen slips to like six, but I think that's the best. If you're able to take out Arnold Allen, I won't give you the side eye anymore. And it's like, you know what, Brian Ortega's here to stay. I think that's another good fight. Maybe even Volk's a little too early. Let me see.
I would love to see that rematch. I don't know about you guys. I think
that would
be
definitely
a fun rematch.
Pack the crowds too. People would want to see that rematch.
Definitely. Yeah. I think that'd be a really fun rematch. I mean, maybe not immediately. I know I'm sure Brian Ortega's gonna take some time off after this. I don't know how seriously that ankle's injured. I know he took some damage in this fight, especially getting dropped. I mean, maybe later this year. If Volk isn't getting that immediate rematch or something else happens.
Something cater.
I think that's
love to see that fight again.
I think that's a fantastic fight because, one, it allows Ortega to vindicate like one of his biggest losses in career. Mm. And for Volkanovski, Ortega's not the biggest puncher. He's not going to, you know, I mean, yeah. I don't want to jinx anything here, but generally he's really not going to put you out with one shot or put you in that dangerous a position. He's more of a jiu-jitsu fighter, so could be a good comeback fight for Volk also. Yeah. One quick question before we move on to this main event for the UFC Mexico card. Yair Rodriguez, where do we go from here with him? I mean, he kind of always does this, I feel like, where he looks amazing and then kind of just lets it slip away. But yeah, I mean, do you want to see him come back quickly after this one? Do you want to? Do you have any specific opponent in mind? Maybe an Arnold Allen, like you were saying earlier.
Maybe an Arnold Allen. I'm not mad at a guy like Josh Emmett. Even like Josh Emmett, again, he's like a gatekeeper in the division. You beat him, that's a very, very nice win on your resume.
I think him and Yair might have fought already. I'm not.
Yeah, they did, but that was about a year or two ago.
That was the interim fight. The interim fight. Which again was a banger. So I mean,
you could run
to get that one back. Both guys coming off. Emmett's coming off of the win. I mean, both guys are kind of needing to move up, trying to make a push back to that title. I wouldn't hate it.
Or Calvin Kattar even.
Or Calvin Kattar. I think that's another really good fight. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Like those fights, we'll see. I mean, it's very interesting, and I'm glad that this fight finally got decided. I mean, it felt like years we were waiting. I mean, it literally was pretty much a year that we were waiting for this fight to get rescheduled. So I'm glad it lived up to the hype. For this main event, though, for this UFC fight night, it was also a really, really fun night, a really fun fight, I should say. Brandon Moreno taking on Brandon Royval. Royval getting the split decision win over five rounds. It was a tough fight, really, really back and forth. I felt like I was expecting to see the altitude of the Mexico City card kind of play a bigger role throughout the entire night. Honestly, I really only saw it take part in this fight specifically. It felt like Moreno and Royval were definitely getting really, really tired heading into that fourth and fifth round, which could have swayed it for Royval based on how you saw it. But I mean, I guess I'll just ask you guys first, do you think that Royval won that fight? And were you happy with the decision?
When it comes to those later rounds and both fighters are tired, I mean, Brandon Royval, I mean, he may have looked a little bit tired, but he definitely looked like the fresher man in those last rounds. And I mean, you look at the stats, 556 punches thrown in that
between
fight.
Between the two? Oh my
God. No, just him.
Just Royval.
Just Royval.
Yeah. I know, it's like a Holloway-esque stat.
Yeah.
I mean, an unreal output. I mean, the guy, I remember there was something right before his title shot in December where his coach said that the guy could run like 5 miles and not even start breaking a sweat. Like, he's just,
that's crazy.
His cardio is just unreal. And I mean, he's another guy like Merab who just can keep throwing and not somehow just keep going. I mean, they find the second, third, fourth, fifth win sometimes. I mean, to throw 500 punches in a 5-round fight is unreal. But I mean, it just comes down to one of those fights where you think somebody could win a round through output or just looking like the more active fighter, even though they're not really landing anything super clean, not really landing big shots. It's just, okay, they're the more active fighter, they're the more aggressive fighter. And I think that's why it kind of got swayed towards Royval, especially towards the end of that fight.
I mean, this is, Bilal Muhammad doesn't have nothing on this decision. I mean, this is this was as good as a fight. And even the first fight between these two, like, come on. Like, Moreno and Royval together, like, it's always going to be a good fight. And I'm not mad at it. Again, it's just the aggressive who looks fresher at the end of it. I mean, I'm not even mad at a third fight, you know?
we have too many rematches at flyweight. I'm here to say I will be that guy that goes out onto that ledge. Moreno has literally fought like in like 5 rematches in this past 5 fights. It's ridiculous. I want to see him fight somebody new. Anyway.
This was good, though. And the first one was good. Dang, man.
The flyweights have been on fire lately. Yeah, it's been a fun time to watch flyweight fights. So I mean, it's just the speed. I think I was even watching with some of my friends. They're like, is this fast forward? Like, these guys are so fast. And I mean, it's the truth. These flyweight fights are so quick and they're so technical. Every single time, it seems like, especially top of the division, every time they're out, it always seems like there's a good fight.
Yeah, no, definitely. And just one funny thing I remember watching, and I just was like, I want to bring that up during the podcast. During the decision, when Bruce Buffer was reading out the decision, very, very close fight, both fighters didn't know who won. I just found it so funny how, as he was saying it, both these guys' first name is Brandon. So when he said he was Brandon, you can literally see like all the crowd get quiet or hear it get quiet, and both guys are like, "Oh, is it me?
Well,
is it me?"
Brandon Royval thought he lost.
Exactly.
When he said, I think I even thought Royval lost. When they said Brandon, I was like, "Oh," because I was rooting for Royval, and I think Royval looked at his coach. He's like, "Man," and then they raised his hand. And he's like, "Whoa,
it's Royval," and I was like, "Yeah." It was just so. I found it so funny how both guys were just left like extra in suspense for another couple seconds because both their first names are Brandon. But yeah, really impressive. I felt like Royval definitely edged out the win. One thing I definitely wanted to highlight in this fight and just kind of all of Roy Vall's fights, his step-up knees are some of the best knees mm-hmm. I've seen in the UFC. I don't know if it's something with, like, his height in the flyweight division, if he's just exceptionally tall, he has, like, longer legs, something like that, but just something about his knees. He's always he's consistently able to find the chin or at least put it just in an area that, while another fighter's swaying, it just really, really effective stuff to the point where I haven't really seen it too much else in the UFC. So just another thing that I was really impressed with.
I'm glad you bring that up because I honestly do think that knee is what kind of swayed this fight towards Roy Vall. I think that's how he won this fight was I think he made the adjustment maybe the second or third round where he threw one and it landed. Perfect. And since that, he kept throwing it over and over and over again. And it's just Moreno likes to dip in, I think, towards that side of where he likes to throw that knee. And Roy Vall recognized it. And every time he threw it, he seemed to land it. And it caused Moreno a lot of problems because it seemed like he couldn't get inside of him because every time he was stepping inside, up came that knee. And it came so quick and accurate. And I think that's really what swayed this fight in his favor.
I mean, he's 5'9", which is tall. I mean, even
tall for that division, definitely.
Yeah, tall for the division. But you kind of see that in the lighter division. You have a slew of like taller champions, mm-hmm. like even like Max Holloway, even in the division heavier than that. Max Holloway, like what, 6 foot, something like that. I mean, something about that long, lanky build, just able to like get in there and you know create space. It's distance control. I mean, it works like perfection.
Even 35 with Sean O'Malley. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about it. Everyone's saying, "Oh, Sean's 6 foot." No, he's really 5'7". Oh, he's 5'9". I've seen a lot of talk about the heights
now.
It's the
long arms, man. Those long arms, those long legs, they give you like an additional like 3 inches, man.
Oh, definitely. Having that reach is so important. Man. Yeah,
I remember back in the day, I read something or heard something somewhere that what Chuck Liddell used to do was when they measured his reach, he would bring in his shoulder blades a little bit so his arms seemed shorter than they actually were, just so he could have that.
Here.
Yeah, so he could have the extra couple of inches on his reach. I mean, it's a really important thing if you're able to throw off that guy just a little bit. I always found that so funny, though.
Damn.
It's not cheating. It's just kind of, you know, adjusting the rules.
So Chuck Liddell was out here. I mean, Chuck Liddell was a barrel-chested, strong guy. He's out here with long arms, too. That was damn.
But yeah, I mean, a very, very fun fight night overall. I mean, just the crowd was electric. All the fights I feel like lived up. And yeah, overall, I mean, that also comes with the announcement that UFC 306 will be officially held at the Sphere. Chris Carino is so, so happy right now. I can only imagine. We'll talk to him about that hopefully next week or at some point. But I mean, I guess I'll just ask you guys very quickly. I mean, are you excited for that Sphere card? And I mean, do you have any possible main events in mind?
I'm curious just to see how the setup is there. I mean, that's going to be really interesting.
Yes, it
should
is.
Be fun. I mean,
Super
that atmosphere seems cool. Oh, that atmosphere for UFC would be fun. So, in terms of predictions for matchups, there, I'm not too sure. What month did you say it was again?
Let me look it up very, very quickly.
I believe it might have been
September
or something
like
that. Like yeah, because I think it was going to be Mexican Independence Day.
14th.
Okay. Yeah. I know I've seen Sean O'Malley really calling for that Ilia Topuria fight. I think even Ilia threw out Sean's name recently, too. I mean, that's a headline of Sphere main event. That might be something exciting. I mean, definitely Sean O'Malley and Ilia Topuria, two of more of the like exciting strikers in the UFC, two of guys who have a lot of finishes, a lot of punching power. I can't see how that's a bad fight. So I think that'd be a fun one for that event. What about you, buddy?
I mean, yeah, I think that's perfect. I mean, like James Dolan hasn't done a lot of things right. He's done this right. I mean, the Super Bowl, I don't know if you guys watch, just to get off track a little bit. Super Bowl was fantastic. The Sphere is like the best like idea he's ever had. Like, thank God for that. But I mean, like, yeah, Sugar Sean O'Malley. I mean, he's the biggest star in the UFC right now. If he's able to drag Connor, you know what? If he's able to drag Connor out somewhere, maybe grab, because by that time the Chandler saga is probably going to be finished. You know what?
I don't know. It might not be finished.
I don't think.
Really?
I don't think Chandler's going to go to the grave with this one if this fight doesn't happen, because there's no way he lets it go. Oh, there's no way. But I like you bring that up.
It has to happen sometime between now and 306. I would love to see Connor and Sugar Sean just in a ring together. That would be like
that'd be fun.
Perfect for the Spear.
Oh my god,
know.
That'd be ridiculous.
That'd be insane.
Connor might be a little too big for Sean right now, though. I don't know.
Come on.
He's way too big for him right now.
You think so?
Oh, he's massive.
Coming off the set of Roadhouse looking like...
That movie sucked. The kids love Sean O'Malley. The kids love Sean O'Malley.
Listen, the kids love Sugar Sean, but, I mean, he's 135, and Connor right now is probably walking around 200.
Make him shave it off. Yeah. I don't know. Just make it happen.
The most intense weight cut of all time.
And it's straight muscle, too. It's not even fat, because we know he's been on drugs, so... you'll go through hell. Make this fight happen.
Oh, man. Well... Either way, whatever happens, that 306 card should be very, very fun. I can't wait to see what Dana White has cooking up in the lab for that one. One last thing I do want to talk about before we wrap up this episode. Jarginho Rozenstruik is fighting in the main event this weekend against Shamil Gaziev. Obviously, compared to the past 2 weeks, not the most, you know, exciting fight out there. People have, you know, their gripes with Jarginho or Jarginho Rozenstruik. And not too many opinions out there about Shamil Gaziev. He only has one fight in the UFC, one in Dana White's Contender Series. But considering that they're putting this in a main event against Jarginho Rozenstruik, they obviously put a lot of faith in this Gaziev guy. So off the back of that, I just want to ask you guys, I mean, do you have any picks kind of figured out? If you don't, are you just excited to see the fight? Do you think it might be a dud? Just give me general takes. For myself, I mean, for how much that Jarginho Rozenstruik has bounced around the UFC, and as of late, I believe in his last four, he's 1-3, with a win over Christakis, which isn't the most impressive win, if I'm being completely honest nowadays, considering that Christakis is out of the UFC. So yeah, I'm not too excited for this one. I'm excited to see what Shamil might be able to do against Rozenstruik. But what do you guys think?
I mean, I think this is Rozenstruik's sixth main event now that he's headlined. And I think that's now, I mean, even if they're fight nights, that is more than every current UFC champion except for Jones, which is definitely something interesting. I mean, the GOAT, potentially, of fight nights? I don't know. I mean, I don't know how many of them he's won. But Gaziev is coming in here. He's has 8 knockouts to his name, undefeated, definitely a prospect with a lot of power in his hands. Rozenstruik, another guy with a lot of power in his hands, but we talked about not as skilled in the striking as his accolades show sometimes. I mean, he's kind of a guy who can get kind of wild and kind
fundamentally,
of...
Fundamentally, he's not very good.
He can abandon the fundamentals in kind of more heated situations and a lot of firefights, and I think that's how he gets caught a lot of the time. So, I mean, that's all Gaziev needs, a guy with a lot of power, 8 knockouts to his name. I think that he pressures Rozenstruik, gets him in a spot where he's going to feel that pressure, basically, and he's going to start throwing a little wild, and maybe he gets caught, and I think Gaziev's going to come out with another knockout.
You know what? First of all, he has, like, X amount of, like, headlining, and Bilal can't get one, guys. Bilal can't get... No, okay, Bilal's not going to get one. Okay.
Yeah, no, he's not going to get
one. He's not going to get one? No. Okay, but Rozenstruik, Shamil's actually favored in this fight to win. Rozenstruik, I mean, I'm not going to discriminate against guys who are fundamentally bad with a lot of power, Dricus, because Dricus happened. So, you know what? I'll give him the edge here. I don't think Shamil's going to be able to come in, like, straight off of, like, a fight night. I know he's undefeated, 8-0, but... yeah, give me Rozenstruik. I'll just go with the guy who's been here, who knows who's familiar with the light. Yeah, I have nothing really for this fight, to tell you the truth.
Familiar with the light, but the light hasn't been too kind to him.
He's been here, though.
he's been here, but Gaziev's a guy who's just kind of steamrolled everybody. In his last four, it's all finishes. I mean, there's a reason he's undefeated. I mean, it seems like he can kind of do it all. He's got his last fight was a knockout win. His UFC, well, I guess not debut, but his Contender Series fight was win by a sub. So I mean, he seems like he can kind of get it done in really any way that he wants. But
I mean, even before that, TKO in his fight before that, and then a KO in round 2 back in 2022.
I do think Rozenstruik does have a pretty decent takedown defense, though. That's another thing. That's another thing that's sneaky good about him. I don't think people realize, maybe not the best, but I think it's good enough to like maybe counteract some of that.
Definitely, I think this is going to be a standing fight through the 5 rounds. If it goes 5 rounds, I think maybe 2 or 3 I think we get out of this one and might get a knockout out of that. But I think definitely, this is going to be a standing fight.
Yeah,
and also interesting, too. I mean, I'm only just realizing that Shamil is out of Bahrain. So, I mean, interesting fighter. I mean, I'm always just – I love, you know, the different nationalities that come with the UFC and MMA as a whole, just a very worldwide sport. So kind of cool. I mean, that might be the first Bahrainian fighter to have a main event. So yeah, I mean, really impressive stuff.
It's always cool seeing like the representation from different places. I mean, yeah, we're seeing now just how big Ilya is in his country. Even to Georgians, him being born in Georgia. I remember when I was watching that Volk fight, I was at a sports bar in Manhattan. I think there's about 20 Georgian dudes sitting at a table next to me.
Fire.
Losing their minds. I mean, chanting, singing, doing everything. I mean, I think they even apologized for me to me for the noise afterwards, because I was just sitting there in shock. But you can just see how much it means to these countries to kind of have that representation. It's always cool to see like a full country behind a fighter. It's definitely one of the things I enjoy the most in the sport.
Yeah.
And I mean, flowers to the UFC, just all the way from what this company originally was when Dana became president, like back all the way back in 2001, hemorrhaging money, guys in and out of the roster. You weren't able to pick up a superstar. And now it's like a global sport. He has performance institutes. Like, I believe he has some in Africa. He has some.
They're
building one in Africa. He has like all over the world. You know, that's really what you want. The best fighters from all across the world fighting under your promotion, where you're the sole manager, and they all fight each other, and you make millions upon millions of dollars.
That was the main point of that fight night down in Mexico. Yeah. It was for the opening of the PI down there, which looks absolutely sick.
It's beautiful.
But, I mean, that's how you do it. That's how you get new prospects. And I think Mexico's definitely one of those places where they're finding a lot of success and finding really skilled fighters. And as they just continue to expand and bring more opportunities and accessibility to younger fighters who are training, I just think we're going to see the sport just continue to evolve more.
Boxing
and more.
Could take a thing or two.
They could definitely take a thing or two in
I'm
general.
Not, yeah, that sport, we're on bad terms right now. But
Yeah, but one last thing I do want to talk about before we wrap up this episode. I feel like I've said that like five times throughout this episode. But anyway, UFC 300 officially has its main event. We did not talk about it on this podcast. I want to talk about it at least for one or two minutes before we wrap up. I promise we'll get going soon, Max. Don't worry. But UFC 300, Dana White announces Alex Pereira will defend his UFC light heavyweight title against the last person to hold that very belt, Jamal Hill.
Sweet dreams.
I'm a big Sweet Dreams guy. I am so hyped for this. This is going to be a sick fight, guys.
So it lives up to the hype for you? Because I know for a lot of people, it didn't.
Definitely. I think... My theory behind it is there was something else, and I think it may have been a Conor-related thing. Mm-hmm. I think Dana definitely had another plan for this, and it fell out, and that's why maybe didn't reach the hype level as a lot of people. But, I mean, you look at this fight, and, I mean, this is one of the most exciting fights, I think, that definitely of the year. I mean, what a way to cap off already such a stacked event. I mean, there's no way this fight sucks. There's no way.
Yeah. I think that was the key word. It was stacked, because you told me that a lot of people were actually complaining about this card. I was like, really?
A lot of people, yeah. Because everyone was expecting Godzilla versus Kong in the main
not
event.
Like, the casuals don't see, like, the star. They don't see, like, the Conor. They don't see, like, the uppermost. But Alex Pereira's on his way up. Jamal Hill's exciting as hell. Weili Zhang, Yang Xiaonan, Justin Gaethje and Max Holloway are on this card.
Yep.
That's going to be a banger. I know for all the repercussions that fight may not be the best idea, but just good junk food fights. Oliveira versus
Yeah, I was
going to
say, don't forget Charles. Du Bronx is back, and he has never had a bad fight. Come on.
Aldo moving up a weight class. Yeah, it's crazy that some people think that this card is like a little not as big as they want. Yeah, Bo Nickel.
This is one of the best cards of all time. And that is the truth. That's the truth. And it is stacked, and people who don't think that this lives up to the hype, to the expectation of 300, everyone who wants to say
I think
that
there's casuals.
This is I think that's crazy, because
they don't recognize the
it's
star
so
power
good.
Here.
Yeah.
They just don't.
And not even necessarily the star power, but just a stylistic matchup. Yeah. Like, all of these fights are fun fights.
I mean, we're opening up the prelims with Bo Nickel. I mean,
what
universe is this in?
Exactly. It's ridiculous. So, I mean, very, very early predictions. That's the last question I'll ask you guys before we wrap up.
Get me Sweet Dreams round 2 KO.
Wow.
He said before, let him sleep on me and the doctor will wake him up. I think that's how it continues. Sweet Dreams, man. I mean, I've talked about the boxing is so slick. Mm. The punches are straight. They're so much faster. I think he beats Alex to the punch 9 times out of 10. And don't get me wrong, I like Alex Pereira. I think he's a great guy. I think he is one of the best combat athletes maybe ever.
Yes.
But I just think that hands down style, and I think the looping punches are going to get him in trouble in this fight. I think Jamahal Hill kind of has the edge there, and the speed and the boxing and everything.
He certainly is the more slicker boxer. I felt the same way about Jiří, but you informed me that Jiří, it's more of like who got caught first, which I would definitely agree. But everything with Alex Pereira, it just becomes null and void, right? We had Chris Corino on the podcast not too long ago. Mm-hmm. He's like, Alex Pereira's a big, scary dude. I don't care that he's only 11 fights into his career. You're like, oh, Yuri's a tough guy. Yuri's a bit more fluid. No, put Jiří out. like Alex is just a big, strong 6'5", and it doesn't matter that like his style may be ugly. You may not like his movement patterns, but when he lays that left hand on you, good night. It's like it just takes one of those for – And maybe Sweet Dreams will catch some Sweet Dreams. I don't know. I don't know. I may have to roll with Alex here, guys.
Very, very early predictions. I haven't even looked into this fight. I don't know how it's going to match up, but I want Alex Pereira to win. I feel like it would be cool to see him win, but I don't know. I mean, honestly, Zach, you're speaking a lot of facts over there with just the straight punches versus the looping punches. That's a fantastic point. Yeah, you're starting to get me worried for Alex Pereira.
Come on, man.
Here.
I'm excited about this matchup. Listen, I kind of see it already. A lot of people counting out Jamahal Hill, especially coming off. I mean, Achilles injury is very, very serious.
Yeah, he didn't lose the belt.
You can lose a lot of your athleticism that way with that injury. But one of the things that I respect most about Jamahal Hill is him vacating that belt and saying, "Hey, I'm not gonna hold this division up. You guys can hold my belt for me. I'm going to come back and get it." And I think that's what he's going to do, UFC 300.
Yeah, I mean, that's some confidence right there. It's like, I'm not going to try to hold on to, you know, my championship. I know I can get it back. Yeah. I'll just wait for me to get healthy.
Connor.
Connor. Exactly. I mean, do you guys think that Jamahal Hill has the worst tattoo in UFC history, though, the double thumbs up?
No, it's going to have to go to your boy. Oh, my God. His name is escaping me right now. Diego Lopez.
Oh, come on, man.
It doesn't match. Hair and his tattoo don't
match. It looked like
we created him in like UFC, like UFC 5, like he's our own personal fighter. He's a hell of a fighter. He's right. Also on
this
card.
How about this? This is going to go on way too long. So next week, I'll give you guys some homework. Come up with two fighters that have terrible tattoos in the UFC.
Okay.
We'll have a bit of a round table. We'll talk about them, decide which one is, once and for all, the worst tattoo in the UFC.
Okay.
And with that, I think that just about wraps up this episode of Pound for Pound. Make sure to check out the UFC Fight Night on Saturday. And as we inch closer to UFC 299, make sure you tune in next week as we get ready for that. Before I go, I want to give a huge thanks to my always great co-host, Zach Cordova and Mati Dembele. And a huge shout out to our producer for this week, Max Spitza. I've been Andrew Canary, and Pound for Pound is a production of WFUV Sports. Have a great weekend.